Protocols of the Meetings of the Learned Elders of Zion. Protocol Number 1. What We Believe. 1-2. Let's discuss the differences between us Jews and them Goyim, non-Jews. 3. People are basically evil by nature. The bad people in this world far outnumber the good. So the best form of government is not the one that holds reasoned discussions with its people, but one that uses tyranny. Most people would gladly become an all-powerful dictator, and sacrifice the well-being of others, for their own benefit. 4. Where do people get their guidance, and what stops them from acting out their evil desires? 5. In olden times people behaved like animals, and were guided by the force of their bestial instincts. Then as society developed, humans developed laws to follow. But these laws were based on those same natural instincts. So the only valid law is the law of nature, that is the use of force. 6. Freedom is only an ideal, nobody really has it. But if you want to win an election, it is good to preach the ideals of freedom, even if you plan to deprive your voters of it. If your opponent believes in the concept of freedom, like as a libertarian, use that against him. Because if he foolishly believes in freedom, he won't be willing to use the underhanded tactics that you do. He will play fair while you fight dirty. Any government that is based on freedom loses control over its people. This is a terrible thing because, remember, that people are basically bad, and the only way to guide them is by force. If a government is guided by freedom, the people will become weak. We can take advantage of the weakness to overpower them and install a new government. Gold. 7. There was a time when religion was the guiding force of mankind. But now, money is more important than religion. Money, especially gold, is the new guiding force, because it gives power and freedom to the common people. But that freedom is bad, because they'll always want more, and don't know how to use it. We can't allow that. Self-governance can be given to the masses, but only long enough for them to form a disorganized mob. At that point we should intervene, to create strife and racial hatred between their different classes and races. This will cause them to fight and kill each other, hopefully starting a civil war. 8. Once a nation is engaged in civil war, it will either destroy itself, or be weakened to the point where it can be overtaken by another foreign power. In either case, our job will be done as they'll no longer be a threat to us. If that nation ends up in bankruptcy, we'll offer to loan them some of our money. They'll have no option but to take it. 9. If anyone claims that the above is immoral, let me ask them this. Suppose a nation has two enemies, an external enemy, which is a neighboring nation, and an internal enemy, represented by political rivals, who might try to overthrow the nation from within. Well, if it is acceptable to destroy the other nation, without any regard to morals, then why should it not also be acceptable to destroy the internal enemy? After all, it is the more dangerous of the two, and the more likely to succeed in destroying society. 10. Who in their right mind could expect to govern the people, by the use of reasoned debate? Because those people, who are really quite stupid, when compared to you, could then counter your arguments with their own silly arguments, and then you'd have to keep debating them, you'd get nowhere. The people who make up society voters are lame-brained numbskulls who never achieve anything. They spend their time following astrology charts and football. They obviously can't think logically. In fact, the only time they agree on anything is when we trick the majority of them into believing something. So they may as well just let us do our job of ruling them, otherwise the whole nation will erupt into anarchy. 11. Politics has nothing to do with morals. Anyone who tries to govern according to morals is a moron and unsuitable for office. A true politician must resort to cunning and lies if he expects to get anywhere. Great qualities such as honesty and integrity are a burden for any ruler. Anyone in politics who decides to start behaving like this, their career will be over before they know it. Most goyim believe that their rulers should have these qualities, but of course, we know better. Might is right. 12. There is a common held belief that all people are born with rights, meaning that they should be allowed to do or have certain things in life, regardless of who they are. But there is no way of proving this. 13. What is a right? Where does it begin and end? 14. If a ruler starts granting rights, then everyone will start demanding new rights, especially libertarians. Soon, the nation will be overrun with rights, and the ruler will look stupid. From this I conclude that there is only one right, the right of the strong over the weak. It gives a ruler the power to do whatever he wants, and to become supreme lord over those libertarian people who had better give up their rights to him voluntarily. 15. Our method of gaining power is better than any other, because it grows invisibly. Then, when it has gained enough strength, we can unleash it, and it will be unstoppable, because no one will be prepared for it. 16. We need to do a lot of evil things in order to gain power. But that's okay, because once we have power over everything, we can use it to do good things, like running the nations properly. We could never do that if we gave people freedom. The end justifies the means. So let's put aside moral issues and focus on the end result. 17. We have a good long-range plan here, and we can't afford to deviate from it. Otherwise, all our work over the centuries would have been for nothing. 18. In order to plan our actions effectively, we must take into account that the common people are an incoherent mob of blathering idiots who can't even look after themselves. These people are blind, senseless, and have no ability to reason. In fact, they'll get suckered in by anyone. While the majority of them are total nincompoops that would follow one another over a cliff top, as they have no leadership skills, occasionally, one might emerge who appears to have some degree of intelligence. However, even these people don't understand how to lead, and if you let them, they'd bring a whole nation to ruin. 19. Only someone trained from childhood to serve as a leader can truly understand politics. 20. People left to look after themselves will be brought to ruin. That's because their leaders, who emerge from among them, are only interested in power and glory. Is it possible for these people to put aside their self-interest and manage the affairs of their nation? Like, can they defend themselves from an external enemy? No way. When a project of that scale is divided up among the many dim-witted members of their society, it becomes unintelligible to them. We are despots. 21. Only a despotic ruler can effectively carry out large operations and distribute all the necessary resources to the various departments so that important plans can be executed. From this, we conclude that the most effective government is one that concentrates all its power in the hands of a single responsible person. Without absolute despotism, there is no way to guide the masses, and civilization will fall apart. They are savage barbarians, and behave like that at every opportunity. The moment that people gain freedom, it quickly turns to anarchy, which is just savagery. 22. Notice that when people are given freedom, they use it to drink themselves senseless, and behave like animals. We ourselves should avoid behaving like that. Going more always drinking alcohol, or thinking about doing so, we cause this to happen by using our many agents to promote it as part of their culture. It increases immorality and makes their youth stupid. We have agents placed everywhere, occupying many positions throughout society, such as tutors, lackeys, governesses in the houses of the wealthy, my clerks and others. We also have a lot of women agents, acting as prostitutes, who assist in the corruption process. 23. Our modus operandi is force and make-believe. Only force gives you power, especially in the hands of a smooth talker. Violence and deception must be the rule for any politician who wants to remain in power. This may be considered evil, but remember, evil is justified when it is used to achieve good. Therefore, we must not stop at bribery, deceit and treachery, if they help us attain our end goal. In politics, we must know how to seize the property of others without hesitation, if it allows us to gain full power over them. 24. We may need to wage many wars in order to achieve ultimate peace. Between wars, we can replace the horrors of war by less noticeable and more satisfactory sentences of death. This is necessary to maintain terror in the populace, which leads to blind submission. A just but merciless penal system is the greatest strength of the state. We do this not only for the sake of gain, but also in the name of duty. For the sake of our victory, we must stick to the program of violence and make believe. It is enough for them to know that we are merciless, for any disobedience to cease. The principle of balancing accounts, particularly the repayment of debts, is strongly ingrained, and one which we will take advantage of. We will use this principle as a means to bring all governments under the control of our super-government. We shall end liberty. 25. Far back in ancient times, we were the first to stand among crowds of people and cry out the words, liberty, equality, fraternity. The people fell for our bait. They picked up those words and started repeating them parrot-like throughout the world. As a result, they have taken away the well-being of the world and the true freedom of the individual, which was formerly well protected from mob pressure. The so-called wise men of the Goyim, the intellectuals, could not make anything out of these words. They just cannot see that in nature there is no equality or freedom, that nature herself has established an equality of minds, characters and capacities. They never stop to consider that the mob is a blind thing, and as such, can only elect leaders that must be as blind as the mob itself. And even if the mob does manage to find someone intelligent, that person wouldn't understand politics, as pointed out earlier. Goyim don't take any of this into consideration. 26. thanks to dumbass libertarians, the words liberty, equality, fraternity, have spread to all corners of the earth. These words installed peace, quiet and solidarity throughout all goyim of the earth, and thus weakened their strength. As you will see later, this helped us to our victory. It gave us the possibility of getting our hands on the master stroke, the destruction of privileges and power of their royalty. That royal class was the only defense the goyim had against us. On the ruins of the eternal and air-based aristocracy of the goyim, we have set up the aristocracy of our educated class, headed by the aristocracy of money. The entry qualifications to this aristocracy are based on wealth, which is dependent upon us, and on knowledge, which also comes from us, especially from our learned elders, who have provided much inspiration. 27. Our victory has been made easier by fact that whenever we sought favors from men in power, we always appealed to their most basic of desires, like cash money and all kinds of material goodies. Even one human weakness is often enough to pass control of these men over to those offering them bribes. 28. The concept of freedom has enabled us to convince the people of all countries that their government is a servant of the people, that the people are the true owners of the country, and that a servant can be replaced like a worn-out glove. 29. This possibility of replacing the representatives of the people gives us the power to appoint a new government,